Perhaps no one was hit harder than blue-collar workers after the financial collapse of 2008 and the Great Recession that followed. Industrial jobs went overseas, income inequality reached new heights, and career opportunities for people without college degrees shrank significantly. Jennifer M. Silva describes how young people are coming to terms with growing up in an economically depressed environment in her book, Coming Up Short, Working Class Adulthood in the Age of Uncertainty. It is published by Oxford University Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Jennifer Silva to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
It's Silva, S-I-L-V-A. I made it Silver, but in case people are looking for the book, S-I-L-V-A. What got you started doing research into how young working class adults view their futures?
You know, it's kind of a funny story. When I was trying to find a dissertation topic at the University of Virginia, I had just turned 26, and I became aware of this new genre of self-help books for the quarter-life crisis, which basically say that for young people today, there are just so many choices. There are so many directions you can go in your life that you have this kind of crisis. And I thought, well, that doesn't really square with what I've been reading about inequality and the lack of opportunity for so many young people. So that was how I launched.
Well, you must have looked at those books. What were they saying? Were they totally unrealistic?
I think they were just geared towards a middle or upper class audience who maybe their parents had paid for them to do internships or to travel around the world, who had every opportunity they wanted.
And you're unlikely to see somebody who's poor working at an internship, just can't afford it.
Exactly.
Did your parents or grandparents work at blue-collar jobs?
Yes, actually. I'm a first-generation college student. So my grandfather started off as a mill worker at age 8 in Lowell, Massachusetts, and then later became a state prison guard. And then my own dad is a firefighter.
And Lowell, Massachusetts is one of the places that you chose to talk to people. The other, Richmond, Virginia. Are they similar in any ways?
They are similar. They kind of embody the decline of good, stable, blue-collar jobs and also a lot of tension around public funding.
But the blue-collar jobs started leaving Lowell, Massachusetts a long time ago, and they were moving south to places like Richmond,
sure,
weren't they?
That's
so now
true.
Richmond is now suffering from what Lowell had suffered earlier?
Yes, I think that's true. And then we've also seen the kind of decline in communities, so that maybe what used to buffer, you know, kids in Lowell and Richmond from these economic shocks also kind of going away.
Well, what keeps people in these towns nowadays?
I think a lack of options. One young man said to me, maybe I'd do better if I moved to another state, but he didn't want to leave what little he had, you know, maybe a few friends or at least a job.
Well, if you'd interviewed young working class people in the biggest cities in America, do you believe that your conclusions would have been all that different?
I think I would have seen similar experiences of instability, so probably bouncing from jobs to jobs, and also maybe a fear of romantic commitment in the sense that if people don't feel like they have a good job or can pay their bills on their own, they're not going to want to depend on someone else.
What was the age range of the people you interviewed for the book?
I did 24 to 34. So I waited till they were kind of past 18, you know, they may have expected to have achieved some traditional markers.
And most of these, all of these people had not gone to college?
Some of them went to college. So they all came from families where no one had a college degree. And some of them did try to go off to college. You know, they went through a school system that told them college is for everyone. You have to go to college. And they know that they need a college degree. But once they got to college, they really struggled, whether to figure out how to get financial aid or to distinguish between a for-profit and not-for-profit school.
And right now, student loans and student loan debt is a big issue in this country, not just for blue-collar kids, but for everyone but the very wealthy.
Absolutely. I think the biggest problem among my respondents was that some of them would even drop out halfway through college. So they'd be $80,000 into debt, and they'd drop out because they couldn't really imagine whether it would ever pay off.
And so were they able to find jobs?
You mean middle class or professional
no,
jobs?
Those people who dropped out, they dropped out, and I assume
they went to Dunkin' Donuts or they went to Victoria's Secret or service work.
My guest is Jennifer M. Silva. Her book, Coming Up Short, Working Class Adulthood in an Age of Uncertainty, it's published by Oxford University Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You start off the book with Brandon. Can you tell us his story?
So Brandon was a 34-year-old African-American young man who grew up with his parents working in maintenance at a college. So he said that he always expected college to be the land of milk and honey for him. And, you know, Brandon did get into college. He took out tens of thousands of dollars in loans, and he eventually graduated with a degree in criminal justice. But it turned out that Brandon couldn't get a job using this major. He didn't understand how to translate it. He tried to get a job as a police officer. He failed a test. He was bewildered by the system, and he ended up working in a service job where he's been for 11 years.
What did he believe was the greatest barrier to his success?
He blames himself. So, and then he later on also went on to get a master's degree. He was working full time. He took out more loans because he said, okay, well, maybe if one degree didn't help me, maybe two will pay off.
But he seems to be kind of paralyzed by his fears.
I mean, that is what, so he would say that he's paralyzed by his fears as well. He thinks if he could only take more risks, maybe he could get ahead.
And is that the way you would see his life going? I mean, and what about the fact that he is African-American? We see higher unemployment young African-Americans than with whites who have similar backgrounds.
So I would say it's more a question of whether he's taking the right risks. And he has sort of grown up without a community to help him weigh the costs and benefits of a degree and to help him, you know, he lacks the social networks that might help him transition to a good job. So, for example, when he gets a master's degree in psychology, maybe someone who came from a more educated family or who was embedded in a community that had more knowledge, they might have said, maybe you don't want to take out personal private loans to pay for this master's in psychology.
A large part of the discussion here involves what it means to be grown up. What are the typical milestones of adulthood as far as these people are concerned?
So they've kind of given up on the traditional pathway of moving out of their parents' house, finishing school, getting a good job that pays their bills, getting married, and then having children. That progression of markers just doesn't work for them. You know, they're moving out, then moving back in with their parents. They're going bouncing from job to job, in and out of relationships, and often have children before marriage. So what I found was that instead of depending on these external traditional markers, people have really redefined adulthood to be much more psychological and internal.
What did they tell you when you asked them if they felt like they were adults?
So they would tell me these stories of, well, I had a really hard childhood. I've struggled with depression for a really long time, but you know, I recognize that, and I've learned how to manage my emotions and make myself feel better. And, you know, I think that's really taken a lot of growing up. So it was just a redefinition.
Well, we've been reading about people who are claiming that this new generation is narcissistic. I assume that that's usually applied to people from the middle class and up. But do you see it here as well?
I think adulthood for them is characterized by this intense self-focus, but I think it is in the absence of more collective or community-embedded rituals of adulthood. So it's almost like they're making a virtue out of their isolation and their lack of choices.
Well, they are faced with a lack of choices. It's harder to be a blue to be a working-class person in the United States today. That used to be the way people moved up the social ladder.
Right, exactly. So maybe they watched their own dad become a police officer or a firefighter and have a stable life and buy a house, but that's not really available.
What were some of the common responses you got when you asked your interviewees about the hardest part of growing up? What was the hardest part of growing up?
One of the hardest parts about growing up is not really having any guidance or someone to turn to. So people would say, oh, I wish I just had a 50-year-old to come and tell me what to do. So they really are on their own to try to, you know, take risks or not take risks or try to figure out what it means to live this meaningful life.
Well, are 50-year-olds any better at figuring out what's going on right now? People, blue-collar workers or people who had worked in those kinds of jobs who now find themselves trying to, I mean, now we're seeing a bunch of older people working at Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's as well.
Right. The 50-year-olds are also bouncing from job to job or in and out of relationships as well. So it's more of a nostalgic or idealized image of looking back.
Well, you mentioned that they sometimes have children without getting married. In the past, one of the markers of growing up was you graduated from high school, you got a job, and you married your high school sweetheart.
Right.
Not happening anymore.
No, that is definitely not happening anymore. For men, there's a sense if, you know, they can't make enough money to support a family, then they want to avoid these committed relationships. They can't really live up to that provider role. And for women, there's almost a fear of depending on these men. And so they think, one woman told me, I'd rather be alone and fierce than be in a relationship and be milquetoast. So she doesn't want to risk that.
So they're getting married much later, if at all?
If at all, they get married later, but they also get divorced. So it's more of a cycle in and out.
It's interesting that it's happening in this country in this way. In some European countries where children are more likely to be born out of wedlock nowadays, it's usually for totally different reasons.
Right. And even
that,
if they're...
That has to do with liberal attitudes. But are these kids liberals?
No, these are not liberals. And, you know, maybe they have children in cohabiting relationships, but they're not stable cohabiting relationships like they might be in Europe. It's more kind of in and out, searching for the right partner. And I would say they are actually not at all liberals. They're more hostile to liberals and hostile to government in general.
So they have strong political beliefs. Do they vote?
Not really, no. It's more of a distrust of government and a belief that they can't really make a difference anyway.
They come out of families that tend to be religious. Are they religious?
You know, they're really not religious either. They're not embedded in these religious communities that maybe their grandparents or parents were. So there really is this stark isolation.
Does it matter whether they are white, black, Hispanic, or Asian?
Well, so the black men whom I interviewed did face longer bouts of unemployment and much more discrimination in the labor market. But in terms of kind of blaming themselves and facing instability and really struggling, I would say no. I would think that social class in some ways is a much stronger predictor of how they end up.
My guest is Jennifer M. Silva. Her book, coming up short, Working Class Adulthood in an Age of Uncertainty. It's published by Oxford University Press. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Jennifer M. Silva, who's written a book called Coming Up Short, Working Class Adulthood in an Age of Uncertainty. It's published by Oxford University Press. We invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. If this is something that you have experienced personally, you can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. What did the people you spoke to feel about the way they are being portrayed in the media?
Well, I think in the media we see this portrayal of young people as irresponsible, as carefree.
Having a sense of entitlement.
Hugely entitled, right? I think one of the best quotes I've read is, they're living and breathing themselves, and that keeps them very busy. And of course that is completely divorced from the experiences of the people I interviewed.
So were they upset that they turn on television and they see their generation or people in their situation depicted in a way that they don't connect to at all?
It's funny. They are a little bit upset, but at the same time, they're the first to blame themselves for not working hard enough and for expecting things to be easy. So they'll say, well, my grandfather dug ditches. My generation should be working harder. At the same time.
If we had the opportunity.
If we had the opportunity.
But they're opposed to government, despite the fact that President Obama has proposed and been thwarted in his attempts to find jobs for people like them.
They are opposed to government, and I think that's because of their experiences of bewilderment and betrayal in most of the institutions that they encounter in their daily lives, whether education or the military or healthcare. You know, they never quite have the knowledge they need to navigate institutions, and so they become very distrustful.
Well, I'll get to the military in a moment, but sure. You say a major factor in this discussion is neoliberalism. How did its growing influence affect the industrial working class?
So when I talk about neoliberalism, I mean a kind of widespread belief in untrammeled individualism and self-reliance. So this idea that government should only exist to protect private property and should basically get out of everyone's way. And the young people I spoke to buy into this idea. They are very quick to blame the government for getting in their way, for maybe giving money to people who don't deserve it, wasting their tax dollars.
And so it's led to what you say is the privatization of risk.
Right. So, for example, most of them don't have stable jobs. They don't have health insurance. They don't have pension plans. And so they're really on their own. And if something happens, like one of my respondents fainted one day and ended up $5,000 in debt, so now she can't go to school from the medical bills. And so they're really bearing these risks individually.
Well, they don't have medical insurance.
No, and what's interesting is in Massachusetts, some of them even complained about being fined or taxed for not having the mandatory insurance. But at the same time, they were very confused about how to sign up. And so it's complicated.
Let's take a call. This is from Peter from Rockland County. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
We're well. Go ahead.
This seems to me like I've shared some of these experiences. I'm a middle class kid, so I'm much more well off and much luckier. But it seems to me that this is the natural effect of what in America is really an atomized society, and how whereas our parents had a similar culture and they're probably just as individualistic, now that we're on really hard economic times, the weaknesses of an atomized society are showing through. The isolation you describe, you know, is particularly important here. Because, like, young people, they really have no one to turn to. You know, we are completely on our own. And if we don't, like, you know, if we're not successful, we're blamed for it. You know, it's our fault.
Well, your parents blame you for not being successful?
Never in like, you know, that's not usually a dinner table conversation, but I think it's implied. I mean, I'm lucky enough my parents have let me move back in. I'm 27. I lost my job a year ago. I got it back. But now I got to go to school to get a master's to get better job security, pretty much. And, you know, if we don't, we're not going to get good jobs and we're not going to be able to move up.
And this really speaks to this idea of privatization, where kind of the only safety net is maybe your own parents and yourself.
But this also means that you've put off doing other things. Do you want to get married, have children?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes you nervous. It makes you uncertain about, like, you know, can I really get married in the next 2 years? Like, you know, what is my life going to be like? Like, what if I lose my job and I lose, you know, my income? Am I going to be able to afford going to grad school? You know, like, it adds all these uncertainties that I don't think they existed, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Well, one of the things that we heard in the past was that you had to go to college to have a reason. You made so much more money in your life if you had a college degree. But now it's you have to go to grad school.
Exactly. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Bachelor's degree is pretty much the new high school degree. And having that is really, you know, it doesn't really matter, even though you can put just getting one can put you in the debt for decades. You know, now the idea that you have to go to grad school to have pretty much equivalent status in society is, you know, it's like a weight, you know, pushing down on you.
Thank you for calling us, Peter.
Thank you.
Now, how many of the college graduates you spoke to were able to get jobs in their chosen fields?
Two or three of them. One in nursing, one in kind of administration for business, and then one actually in consulting, but very few of them. Most of them would kind of get an associates of arts and then have no idea what to do with it and go back to the service economy.
Does the ratio change when you look at class, race, and sex?
In my sample, it doesn't, because it's a very small sample. In my sample, it really, if someone had a very clear path, for example, if they majored in nursing and they knew that they should become a nurse with that degree, they did well. Mm. Without that clear path, they kind of end up back in the jobs they came from.
Although we hear conflicting news about nursing in particular, that there's a nursing shortage and that there are a lot of nurses who are out of work.
Right.
I've never understood that. Meredith left this question on our show page. Could you give any information comparing how the working class in other advanced countries manage the transition to adulthood? Did you look into that? Or were you only talking to the people
I was
you
really
researching?
Only speaking to the people in the United States. My initial project was supposed to be a comparison of France, but I wanted to graduate, so I didn't do that.
Are there some blue-collar jobs that still offer a sense of job security?
Some of the more kind of traditional blue-collar jobs like firefighting or police or like mail carriers do still offer that stability. They're unionized. They pay a family wage. And the few people I spoke with in those jobs were able to have much more traditional lives.
And they also offer pension plans. But recently we've been hearing from all over the country about restructuring pension plans.
Right.
So even that as an inducement that you'd be able to retire at a fairly young age and live comfortably, that no longer is the case.
Right, just chipping away at all of the protections.
So is the military the way that many people see as the only option?
Yeah, for many of them, the military does offer this opportunity of upward mobility and also just a path, a clear path that they can take. However, it's also becoming very hard to get into the military, more and more competitive. For example, if you don't have a high school degree or you have a criminal record, you don't have a very good chance of getting in.
Are more young women seeing the military as a reasonable option?
Yeah, that in my sample, there were definitely women who had careers out of the military.
Julie from Hastings, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the show. My question was that I'm surprised, if I understood correctly, that so many working class young people are for small government, are skeptical of government. I'm surprised at that, seeing as how polls show that the majority of Americans, which is to say the average American, is for jobs programs, for New Deal kind of programs, for decreasing military spending, for taxing the 1%. So I guess that's my question. If the average American is for those things, I'm confused about this sample.
So I think that what I'm speaking to is the kind of everyday experience or encounter with government. So there's kind of what someone might mark on a poll, and then there's kind of the everyday experiences of government and trust and risk. And so the attitude I heard was that people would say things like, the government holds everyone guilty until proven innocent. So it was this idea that they couldn't really trust the government. That doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want jobs programs. But it does mean that they don't really trust the government to work for them.
But when they enter the military, aren't they dealing with the government?
And sometimes that's also another site of betrayal. For example, maybe they sign up because they want the signing bonus when there were signing bonuses, and then they thought they'd get it all at once, and then it ends up being over 20 payments, and they feel like they've been lied to again.
Is a veteran status valuable when you're entering the job market? It used to be a really important thing. It gave you a step up, didn't it?
It does. And in these kind of stable blue-collar jobs like firefighting or police, it gives you a huge leg up.
What about vocational high schools? Aren't we seeing them closing down all over the country?
We are. And there's so much investment in this college for all policy and a kind of lack of investment in vocational schools. And one of my respondents, Rob, actually did graduate from a vocational high school. And by the time he tried to get a job, the skills he had learned were obsolete. And so the school hadn't actually kept pace with the changing market.
And more schools are focused on college preparation. Even under the best of circumstances, not everybody's going to go to college.
Right, but everyone believes that they should go, or they believe that college is their only chance at a successful life. And that makes them very vulnerable.
Many of these people come out of religious families. Do they tend to be as religious as their parents?
You know, most of the people I spoke with have really embraced this kind of I have to fix myself, I have only myself to turn to ideology, instead of one that says, you know, maybe I can leave things in the hands of God. So they tell a narrative of redemption, maybe, but it's more about changing themselves.
A listener commented that a lot of jobs require a college degree now, even when it's not really necessary. Is the push for everybody to go to college working against some people?
I think it is, especially because they spend so many years in and out of college, taking out more loans, feeling increasingly, you know, maybe betrayed by a system if they can't figure out what to major in or how to meet their requirements. So I think it does kind of just keep them running in place when maybe they could even be learning skills.
One listener wonders if the young adults you spoke to criticized the kind of economic changes that have happened in the past 30 years. It was possible a generation ago to raise a family, buy a house on a fireman's salary, but that's a lot more difficult today.
They're aware of that. However, they actually kind of look back to this mythical past and think the government used to leave everyone alone and let them kind of live their lives. And now the government is kind of keeping people from success.
So they didn't do very well in their history classes or they didn't take economics in high school.
I think that's right.
Where do you think that comes from?
Well, I think that they're bombarded by this sort of self-help message. I think it's on, you know, Oprah. I think it's in self-help books. I think, you know, maybe they've participated in AA or NA. All around them, they're learning you have only yourself to blame. It's up to you to kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And they really believe in that.
Achilles from Washington Heights, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to share that I graduated in 2011, and I am one of the very lucky ones within my class that is actually working in the field that I study for. So I study political science. But I must tell you that my program was not even remotely similar to what I do within the field. So, however, it has extremely helped me function in the field that I am a part of right now. I definitely think that my education is outdated. It was very historical and very airy and scholarly driven. But I've been able to use that degree to my advantage in the field that I am a part of. And I know that many of my friends are doing fellowships or are not necessarily in the field that they went to school for. And I know how difficult it is for folks like me who study social sciences or political science to find a degree, to find a career, to start a career in the field that they went to school for in today's days.
So let me back up. And what you're saying is what they taught you in school is totally irrelevant to your life, but getting the degree was really important.
No, actually, I'm saying that my degree taught me a lot of things that my job does not necessarily ask me for. However, I've been able to use it to as a leverage in the field that I am a part of, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Not necessarily sitting down, reading history, and writing research papers, but the social science skills that I learned allow me to do a much better job in my current job.
Okay, thank you for calling us. Mike, hi, you're on the air. Mike from the Bronx.
Yeah, hi. 70% of the jobs that created since 2006 have gone to part-time level, and I believe that when the austerity budgets of Europe are finally curtailed, then we'll see more jobs here because market demand will increase, and also that Obama in January announced that we're going to facilitate that by dropping our market restrictions between us and Europe.
Well, you've kind of brought up a whole bunch of different things, but let's talk about the part-time jobs. Is that where a lot of people wound up working, the people you talked to?
Yes, definitely short-term jobs where they can't really depend on their hours being regular, or maybe their hours will be cut.
Has the Obama administration passed any legislation that has significantly affected the young working class?
I'm trying to think of maybe
he's proposed a number of things.
Right. I'm trying to think about his policies on college loans, perhaps. That's a good question. Can you think of any?
No. Well, yeah. I didn't write the book. The big question here is, how will the working class's ability to make a living affect the health of the country in the years to come? Are we going to have a built-in 10% unemployment, or 8% now unemployment rate? Will that just become the norm?
For me, I think what we should really worry most about is the way that people are kind of embracing isolation, embracing this sense of bitterness, of not trusting other people, of feeling like they have to go it alone, and of not really wanting to invest in other people or in institutions.
Of course, you were only speaking to people in two towns. Perhaps if you had gone to Oregon, you would have gotten a very different response, or Seattle, or
We do see national data of declining trust among this population. And so I would actually imagine that we'd hear similar stories. I mean, for example, in Oregon, where maybe timber jobs are gone now.
Do you plan to continue research in this area, or is this book the end of the project?
I would like to write a book on working class conservatism next.
This book is called Coming Up Short, Working Class Adulthood in an Age of Uncertainty. It is published by Oxford University Press, and my great thanks to Jennifer M. Silva for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.